Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our friend John Glennon, who covers the Titans for SI.com, covers the Nashville Predators for NHL.com. Johnny, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys this morning?
You're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, John, what did you make of Predators locker room cleanout day yesterday, and specifically some interesting stuff from Philip Forsberg regarding his future and negotiations with the Predators? What did you make of the way that Forsberg handled that yesterday, and do you think any differently of maybe how he's leaning one way or the other?
I think Philip Forsberg is a pretty smart guy. I don't think he is one to really show his hand. I will say that much about Philip Forsberg. I did come away with it. He is still saying many of the same things that we've heard from him throughout the season, which to me sounds encouraging as far as re-signing here. I didn't think there was any distancing to me from Philip Forsberg yesterday. I think at the same time, he's not going to let emotion overwhelm him. As he said yesterday, there's a difference between hockey side and business side. He's not going to let it, just the fact that he has played here so long, clearly has developed good relationships. I don't think that, those can be the sole factors, obviously, that he's coming back. So, he's going to be looking for some money, and he's due some money. So I think I would be optimistic if I'm a Predators fan, but, deal is not sealed.
So we got this question earlier, John, from a caller, and I'm gonna send it your way because maybe you can do a better job than we did. If you were David Poile, or I guess, the GM of the Preds, what would you do to – like, what would be your three, four things that come immediately to mind on trying to get this team from middling, just making the playoffs kind of team to team that could actually do damage in the playoffs?
I think, one of the first that comes to mind for me, is the scoring depth up front. I think every night we could probably count on that combination of, Forsberg and Duchesne, almost regularly making impact. But beyond that, I just never got the sense that there was enough depth in terms of offensive scoring. So, it's always a challenge to find another top six forward, but I think that's very much needed on the Predators. I think there was too much time last year where we saw the Luke Cunningham experiment and really the Ellie Tolvanen experiment, and neither of those were really working. So I think there's more punch needed, beyond that first line. I think defensive depth is still a concern too. I think in years past, we became so used to the Predators, with three, four, five really quality defensemen. And I'm not sure that's the case right now. We've got two very good defensemen, two that sort of have some potential, certainly, but not, have fulfilled it yet. And really that third pair, it's been just a constant rotation over the years, and I think that's hurt the Predators. So I think more depth needed there as well. And I think a backup goalie that's better than David Rittich. And I mean, I'm not trying to be joking about that, but, I think UC Saros played too often last year. 67 out of 80 games he was starting in last year, just too much. And I think you saw that towards the end of the season. So there are three kind of ideas right there in trying to sort of bolster this roster because, as we know, there is still a sizable gap between the Predators and the elite teams of the league.
John Glennon on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road, covers the Preds for NHL.com. So John, obviously there's a lot of talk right now with Preds fans on John Hines and David Poile. Let's just start on the John Hines front. This was his third season with the team, his first full regular season with the team. What do you make of the job that John Hines has done so far during his Predators tenure, and how do you feel about him as the head coach moving forward?
I think in general, I'm good with John Hines at this point. I'm not saying, everything has gone tremendously, but I think you can point to more good than not at this point. And I think one of the strongest selling points for John Hines to me is what he did with some of these veterans. Matt Duchene in particular comes to mind. I think there was certainly a sense that, you know, he had tapped out as far as the ceiling and as far as what he was going to do with the Nashville Predators. And I think John Hines has to get a lot of credit for him having, you know, really a career year, and both he and Ryan Johansson, I think you can lump together a little bit. I think John Hines managed to up their intensity, their competitive level on a regular basis, and I think he should get a lot of credit for that. I also think, you know, we heard the word identity used a lot, probably too much during the past year, but at the same time, we have to remember that pre-John Hines, this was a team that really had no identity in the, you know, last year, year and a half of Peter Laviolette. And we know now what the Predators are. You know, they're a physical team. They're a hardworking team. You know, I'm not saying that they're one of the elite teams in the league, but he has created a certain sense of identity here, that I think has established itself well. So, in general, to me, I think John Hines is good going forward. Obviously, some deficiencies have to be cleared up, especially the way this team struggled to finish the year and started the playoffs as well. But, I'll give him my stamp of approval for what that's worth.
Yeah, no, I would tend to agree. I asked him and some other players yesterday, and it's been interesting just to try to think about and hear different thoughts on, and I want to get your thoughts on, you know, the last month, basically. I mean, I think maybe like a week into April, it seemed to be a pretty clear downturn, you know, in how this team was playing, with the occasional good performance, like a really good performance in that like first game against Calgary, for example, at home. But for the most part, just this team just didn't play as well. And I understand you have the Soros factor then at the very end, but why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think you could probably point to a few different factors. You know, it was interesting listening to some of the players yesterday talk about that. And, you know, Matt Duchene had kind of an interesting theory, too, that, you know, maybe during that time they became more cautious, less aggressive. You know, it seemed like almost every game was, oh, are you in the playoffs? Are you not in the playoffs? Are you barely keeping your head above water? And there was so much, you know, sort of pressure to get at least a point every night that maybe it detracted from kind of their, you know, free-flowing style of game that they've been playing to that point. I think there's probably something to that. I think there's also something, again, to the fact that Saros, you know, had started too many games, that the workload last year was too great. I think that started to show towards the end. I think some of their defensive deficiencies, you know, popped up in that last stretch of the season. You know, they were leaking goals towards the end, and I think we saw some of that kind of that lack of depth that I mentioned earlier, you know, became evident there. And I also think, you know, forever and ever, you know, this season the team talked about, you know, taking less penalties and spending less time in the box. And it never, ever happened. You know, that was a major deficiency for this team. And, you know, I think when you're spending so much time killing penalties, so much time without your best players, you know, in five-on-five, I think that takes its toll on a team. And I think that has to be a factor, too, as you go down the final weeks of the season. But, you know, there are some teams, you know, look at the Avalanche. You know, they struggled, you know, for a couple of weeks down the stretch, 1-5-1 to finish, but they were able to turn it up because they had an incredible talent level on that team. I think this Predators team was one that needed to be hot going into the playoffs, and it just didn't happen, and we saw that.
John Glennon from NHL.com and SI.com on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, John, last thing for you here. How do you view the direction of this team? We heard the players talked about it a little bit yesterday. You lose 4-0 in a playoff series. That's a pretty big gap between you and the top teams in the NHL. How do you view the direction of the team, and how do you view David Poile in charge of that direction as they move forward here?
Yeah, I think that the team is generally moving forward. I still think there's a sizable difference, as evidenced by that, you know, that 4-0 playoff loss to Colorado, that there's a sizable gap. between the Predators and the Elite, and I'm not sure that you can immediately look at the organization or at the roster and say, hey, this organization, this roster is on the verge of making that jump. You know, there are some young players, certainly, you know, a player like a Tomasino is carrying promise, and there are some prospects, you know, in the system that are moving in the right direction. But I don't get the sense that, you know, they're a year away from contending for the Stanley Cup, or perhaps even 2 years away. So, I think it's a slow build, you know, as opposed to they're ready to make a jump right away. And, you know, as far as David Poile leading the way, I think you can make a case, you know, on both sides, I think, for David Poile. And you know, right now the case for keeping David is more his body of work long-term, you know, what he has done for the franchise, kind of building it from scratch really twice, you know, keeping a very competitive team, you know, over the years, 8 straight years in the playoffs, you know, that's nothing to be, you know, sneezed at, even if you only made the one run to the Cup Finals. But, you know, I think the case against David, you know, is more in recent years. You know, the trades have not hit as well. I think he's done a very good job of keeping this core together by re-signing a number of the top players. But as I say, it's not a roster right now that I look at and say is on the verge of competing with the best. So do you look at David Poile and say, okay, yeah, the body of work is strong. We expect eventually, you know, he'll be back to you know, moving towards the Stanley Cup again? Or do you say, you know, hey, it's been a few years since there have been some big boosts and some big surges in the moves that David Poile has made? Maybe it's time to get some fresh eyes. You know, I think you know, a case could be made for either side at this point, and I'm gonna firmly leave that decision to others.
There you go. John Glennon from NHL.com and SI.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, did you have something?
We'll leave it to Jared.
Yes, thank you. We will do that.
Exactly who I was thinking of. Yeah.
That's right. John, I appreciate you. Great stuff as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, John Glennon, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Philip Forsberg discussion. Interesting comments from number 9 yesterday at his locker room cleanout day. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Philip, as you consider your future, how important is the direction of this team moving forward? I mean, how much are you taking that into consideration, along with everything else?
Yeah, no, a lot. I mean, obviously, I've been fortunate enough to be on this team for a long time now, and made the playoffs every year. But at the same time, every player plays to win the Stanley Cup, and so do I. That's my biggest goal, and I do believe that we have a team that can make that in the future. And like you said, I think that's the direction that a team has to be heading, and I think we are.
I understand, Philip, that negotiation has to happen, but all things being equal, do you want to be back here?
Yeah, I mean, that's like you said, I've said that since day one. The goal is to come back here, and the business side is completely different than the on-ice side, as you guys are aware of, and just kind of have to wait and see and play it out. There's been obviously some progression throughout the season from where we started in September, and yeah, I mean, we're obviously, me and my agent and David and Brian and the management are going to be an ongoing conversation in the process, and yeah, we'll just have to see where we end.
That was Philip Forsberg yesterday at Bridgestone Arena, Preds locker room cleanout day, discussing his future and his contract negotiations between himself and the Predators. Joe, I thought some interesting things there. First off, with your question, talking about the direction of the team. We've talked about that on the show today. An interesting quote there from Philip Forsberg, particularly the part that says, you know, been fortunate to be on this team for a long time and made the playoffs every year. But at the same time, every player plays to win the Stanley Cup, and so do I. That's my biggest goal. And he went on after that to say, you know, I believe we got a team that can do that in the future, and you got to be heading in the right direction, all that stuff. And he thinks that they are. But when he said the quote, but, you know, having said that, every player plays to win the Stanley Cup, and so do I. That's my biggest goal. I kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit yesterday as he was discussing that, in terms of where exactly do the Predators fit in that discussion. What did you make of Forsberg's comments there yesterday about the direction that he believes the Predators are heading in?
Yeah, it almost felt like the second half of that quote was like, the obligatory tack on, hey, you know, this team's moving that direction. But there was a little bit of like, but you got to take that into account. And he should. Yeah, you know, it's hard. It's hard for anybody to predict exactly how things are going to go. It's not like you're in on all the personnel decisions if you're a player, but you can see where things are going. I would say this, you know, Philip Forsberg probably didn't think a ton of what this team would be like the day that they traded Arvidsson last year, right? I mean, clearly he was upset. Not, you know, losing a friend, yes. These guys are friends, and they came up together and all that stuff. But also, I mean, that, to me, that move and the Ellis move looked like this was some kind of some serious level, some level of rebuild going on. And so if you're one of those guys, you had to think at that moment, my gosh, like, where are things going from here? And then, of course, the season is surprisingly good overall, but then doesn't end great. So you're kind of back asking that question. I mean, if you're an Ekholm, if you're a Forsberg, well, if you're an Ekholm, you just signed the deal. Obviously, you don't want to see Forsberg walk. You don't want to see other key players traded to get younger too much, because then you're like, okay, by the time we get good again, what am I going to be as a player? You know, but if you're Forsberg, you actually have you got an option right now, obviously. And to me, it's like you have to get yourself taken care of. You have to get the contract the way you want it, and he's going to get paid. Trade protection, big deal. But also, is there another team out there that he looks at and says, actually, see, I think that team, which can pay me and bring me in, could be special with me and could be a contender? How much is that part of like how he's looking at this entire situation?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And, you know, right after that, he said, you know, Vingan asked him, obviously, you know, you've got to go through negotiations, but all things being equal, do you want to be here? And his answer was yes. Like he said, you know, basically he said that from the start that he wants to be here. He said it, and I think has indirectly talked about it. I think yesterday was probably the strongest he's been in terms of, yes, like the goal is to come back here. I think that's probably the strongest thing that he said. Now, what does that actually mean in terms of negotiations? I don't know. He pointed out quickly after that the hockey side and the business side are two very different things. I think we all know that at this point. But, you know, to your point earlier in the show, I don't recall a whole lot of players saying, yeah, I just want out. Well, you know, I have no interest in coming back. So, you know, maybe that's just a thing that he's saying. Maybe he does really want to be back. I mean, I've said this for a while. I believe that Philip Forsberg enjoys it here. I think that in a perfect world, he would like to play here, and he would like to play here for the rest of his career. A lot of times it's not as simple as that. What did you make of those comments from Philip Forsberg?
Really can't wait to get out of here. And guys, I'm actually really excited. This is the last press conference I'll have with any of you. So get your last questions in. I guess you can get on a Zoom when I'm in Edmonton, if you like. I mean, look, the thing is, you got to keep in mind during the year here and there, he'd get asked a question here, a question there, right? I mean, you know, there were and a lot of times where he wasn't available to answer questions. And when he was, it would be the here or there. Yesterday, it was a group thing, and that was the topic for a while. So I think naturally you're going to have like more – and, you know, more answers, but also maybe like more just developed answers because it just becomes a conversation. So I did walk away overall. I would say I walked away feeling it's more likely that he's here than I thought going into yesterday. He did. I guess you could also look at the answer on, and I think it was Alex Doherty who asked him on the lap, or maybe was it you, Glennon? I don't remember.
It was Scribina, I believe.
Okay, well, Paul Scribina, I'm sorry. Scribina's over there, like, you know, we keep asking, cutting him off, and he's like, getting all mad. I'm like, yo, calm down, Scribina. Anyway, yeah, so Scribina asked about the lap, and he gave a very much a non-answer on that, which I guess you could analyze that in different ways if you want. Like, to me, he blew it off, but also, was it his goodbye lap and he doesn't want to talk about it? You know, you could read into that if you want. I came away thinking a little bit more that he will end up here. And he said an interesting point, as you said earlier in the show, that basically talks kind of paused as of the trading deadline. which would, because, you know, if they didn't pause as of the trading deadline and then they kept trying, now knowing the situation, knowing that there's no leverage for Poile with the trading deadline and nothing happened, then, you know, what would that make you think?
Well, honestly, as a Predators fan, that makes me feel better. It really, right. It really would. Like,
yeah,
you know, we talked about it yesterday. You know, obviously, we're not in there in the room, so we don't have, you know, any idea what's going on discussion-wise. But my thought was, well, if they're continuing to discuss this at a pretty, you know, pretty intense level, and you made it through the deadline, and then a month after the deadline, and there's nothing, like that doesn't bode very well for the next couple of months here. Now, Forsberg made it seem like, I'm not going to say that there were zero conversations after the deadline, but he made it seem like wasn't a whole lot of heavy lifting being done after the deadline, and that maybe that's going to come now. So if I'm a Predators fan, I take what he said yesterday, and I probably feel a lot better about it.
Unless you're a Predators fan who wants him gone.
Well.
And he wants just everything to be completely blown up. But, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to tell anybody how to feel, but I would say if you're a Preds fan, you want Philip Forsberg to be part of the team moving forward. Yeah, I mean, you want the absolute elite forwards, and you want you want what you just saw with the Colorado Avs as they came into town and dusted your team. But the closest you have is Philip Forsberg. You'd rather keep him and see what you can build around that.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators and Philip Forsberg on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's coming up next. There's a new way to hear us on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Check us out on 106.3 as well, from downtown Nashville to Spring Hill on I-65 and to Murfreesboro on I-24. You now have two choices to hear our great sports programming and the Nashville Predators as well. Check out 106.3 and save it as a preset. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Phil, like at least here last night, maybe you took it savor a little bit more when you were on the ice after a game, kind of waving to the fans. If it was your last game, was that kind of a moment that you tried to take in just in case?
I mean, it's a tough situation. You lose 4-0. I don't know. Obviously, we're very proud of our fans for sticking with us despite that series, and obviously through the whole season they've been awesome for us. And at the time, you're not really thinking about the future too much. You're too caught up in the moment, just obviously disappointed. And same time, like I said, proud of the fans, the way they showed up. And you almost feel bad for them that we couldn't give them at least a couple more games. But like I said, the Avs, they played well.
That was Philip Forsberg yesterday at Bridgestone Arena, talking about his, I guess, lap, slow skate off, whatever it was, that ended the game on game four that we talked about yesterday here on the show. Taking your thoughts on the Preds on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. By the way, Cole pointing out, Colorado didn't dust our team. They swept us. This is coming from Cole from Nashville, directed to you, Rex Road. No dusting here. It was a sweep.
Fair point. Word usage.
Yes.
Not my strong suit.
Caleb on the text line says, these fans kill me. We finally get a 40-goal scorer, and we want to let him walk. It takes talent to win. We just need more. Can we talk about who specifically we could add in free agency to help in the top six? Is Trennan a top six forward? Is Janot? This is coming from Caleb on the text line. What do you think about that? Obviously, let me first start by saying this. I like Jakob Trennan. I don't think Jakob Trennan is a top six forward. Do you think Tanner Janot is a top six guy? Do you think he could be a top six forward for this team as they move ahead here?
I think it's possible. It's hard to know. You know, it's hard for me to just project sometimes when someone's so young. There's been some huge leaps, obviously, and I mean, he's an example of a prospect to me who was kind of missed on, but also clearly a prospect who has worked so hard that he has far exceeded what I think most people saw in him, you know, during his younger days as a hockey player. So what does that say about his ceiling? You know, it's hard for me to know, but I would say, just looking at this season for what it is, isolate this season. I mean, I would say that's a guy at his age who has a chance to be a top six forward. What do you think?
I think he's got a chance. I like the combination of not only the size, because everybody talks about that with Janot, but he can skate, like he can move. That's what I like the most about him. The concerning thing to me is what happened to him at the end of the season. Was it a wall? Was it just maybe it was an injury that he was playing through that we just didn't know about? But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 1 point in his last 18 games. Now, he did pick up an assist in game four. So, I guess 2 points in his last 19 games coming down the stretch. That's just not good enough. And, you know, you can't have stuff like that if you're going to be a top six forward. Now, I say that, and they trotted out Luke Cunningham in the top six all year long, and he went through a stretch where he had like 2 points in 40 games. So, you know, I guess it depends on what your definition of top six is. But I think Tanner Janot has the capability of being a top six guy on a contending team, on a team that, like we're talking about, that you're trying to build and get towards the Stanley Cup. He's a third line guy, I think. That's probably the way I'd go about answering.
And again, you know, people talk about like middle six forwards. I mean, you need like, I mean, the Hurd line, which I guess technically was their third line this year, right? Yep. I mean, you need that too. I mean, you still need production from other lines. So like top six means something for sure. And certainly, like you said, like Luke Cunningham is an example, like production wise, like that can't be a top six forward for you. You know, that's it just doesn't speak well of your forward group, but you also like, you've got to have other lines, you know, that apart from either like the Hurd line this year, I think it was a special case. I mean, that's the one thing that John Hines really didn't touch. And even when he did, finally, he quickly put them back together, and they, by the way, had a great last game of the season. But, but even apart from that, it's just, you got to have depth. And so Trennan and Janot, if they can be not top six forwards for you, that speaks well of probably what you have, right? But you gotta find somebody else. Somebody else, plural, to me, for this team to have enough in the forward group.
Scott on the text line says, do you think part of Forsberg's negotiations would include him telling Poile he'll re-sign if other key positions are addressed, kind of building the team around him, in a sense? This coming from Scott on the text line. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be that, Joe. Like, I don't know if he's going to walk in and part of the negotiations with David Poile is, all right, well, if you sign so-and-so and so-and-so, then I'll re-sign. Like, to me, you got to have it figured out before free agency begins. So Philip Forsberg, I think, is going to know one way or the other if he's signing with the Predators before free agency begins. And obviously, they're Predators. Like, you've got to know that one way or the other so you can plan your thoughts around that if you're going in. So what I think will happen and probably should happen is Philip Forsberg sitting down now that the season's over and looking at David Poile and saying, all right, I want to be here. I'd like to re-sign here. I also want to compete for a Stanley Cup. What is your plan for this team and this roster to get us closer to that? And it doesn't even necessarily have to be next year, but what is your plan to get us back to being a team that is a Stanley Cup contender? Because right now, the Predators are not Stanley Cup contenders. That is a question that I'm 100% asking if I'm Philip Forsberg.
I agree. How often does that happen in negotiations, I wonder?
I don't know.
You know, so much of it is agent carrying the discussion. It's just one of those things I'd love to know. Like, how often does that kind of discussion take place? But I agree. I mean, if I'm Forsberg, that's information I really want. I want to hear what he has to say about that. And, you know, how does he feel about, like, certain young players in the organization, you know? Now, granted, you could always be sold a bill of goods by your GM in that situation, but I think that's definitely – I mean, I think his answer yesterday said that. I mean, I think it said, like – and he should think that way. And frankly, like, if you're running a team or if you're a fan of a team, you want, you know, your star players to – when they're up for their deals, to care more about just like what they're getting paid, you know, like they want to win. They want to win a cup just like you do.
Dave on the text line says, why is there so little talk about 92? Is his invisibility as an $8 million wildflower just par for the course now? No one even bothers to bring it up. To which my response was, I mean, he's pretty darn good in the regular season. We've talked about that. And Dave said he's completely invisible the last four games. I mean, I get that. He had 2 points in four games. If you want to go down the list of invisibility in the playoffs against the Avalanche, I mean, that list is pretty long, including the guy that we're talking about right now signing a deal with the Predators. Like, look, the overall body of pick of work for Ryan Johansson in the playoffs, I think that speaks for itself, doesn't it? He's been pretty darn good in the playoffs. The question is, has generally been, how do you translate Ryan Johansson's playoff production to the regular season, which I thought he did a pretty good job of this year. I mean, this was, you can make a case that this was Ryan Johansson's best regular season with the Predators. And people like to forget this, but he's had some pretty darn good ones with the Predators. And he did it for the most part without having anybody to play with on the second line with him. You know, he went through a stretch where he was playing with Forsberg and Duchesne, and obviously that helped. Obviously that first power play unit, he picked up a lot of points there. But he was productive all season long and pretty consistent all season long. And he didn't have any top six forwards playing with him. He was playing with Luke Kunin and Nelly Tolvanen for a lot of the year.
Yeah, and I think that last point is a real key, because at the very end, that was the situation too. He was just, you know, Kunin was an albatross around his neck, you know. So you got to take that into account. I think Johansson is, as we said earlier, talking about Duchesne, you know, big moves Poile could make. You know, Duchesne right now coming off that season, you can see him being appealing to teams. Johansson, you know, same salary, a little bit younger, but had a really good year. I agree. Like, you wanted more from him in the postseason, but I don't think that – I think that characterization of him, like the wallflower thing, that's last year. After last year, that's totally accurate. I don't think that's accurate this year. And you can't just overlook or dismiss who he's playing with. He kind of got a raw deal.
Chris on the text line says, have you seen the list of free agents for this upcoming season? If Forsberg really doesn't desire to be here, then there's a ton of talent to sign. About Tanner and Trennan, I think they're both solid third line guys who can occasionally play up when they're hot, not everyday top six guys. I'd probably agree with that last point about Chris. As far as the free agency class is concerned, there's some talent, but a lot of these guys are big names that are no longer those type of players. Like Claude Giroux is a big name. Claude Giroux is not the same Claude Giroux that he used to be. Phil Kessel is a big name. Phil Kessel is not the same Phil Kessel that he used to be. Malkin is a big name, and he's pretty good. I still find it difficult to believe that Pittsburgh's eventually going to let him go. So I think Malkin will probably be back at that point. You got Radulov. Obviously, there's Johnny Gaudreau out there as to what could happen with him. Burakovsky from Colorado is a really good player. Nazem Kadri from Colorado is a really good player as well. We'll see if one of those two signs back with the Avalanche. It's probably hard to sign both of them back. But let's say Kadri's available. He's a really good player. Put up like 87 points this year. He's a centerman. So are you going to have Kadri, Johansson, and Duchesne, and Granlund all on your team signed to play the same position? Now, Duchesne is basically a winger at this point, but you've got Granlund and Johansson that you're paying a pretty good amount of money to. You're going to throw Kadri in that mix too down the middle? And I'm not saying it's the worst idea. I'm just logistically, is that going to happen with the Predators? Right. And would Kadri want to come here? He just played you in the first round and swept you. Probably has a pretty good idea of how close you are to being a cup contender.
Yeah, and I mean, if you went and got him, does that correspond with moving on and trying to move somebody else? You know, I don't know. But, yeah, I would agree. Like, I don't think it's some robust monster list compared to some years. The free agent crop, I think it's actually kind of a weaker year.
We'll have to continue to take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for The Choice Is Yours. As always, we encourage your participation on the text line, 615-737-1025. Make every day a good old day with the hand-cranked taste of Blue Bell ice cream. It's warm outside. The summer weather is finally coming down, and nothing goes better than summer weather with Blue Bell ice cream. You're going to want to go get it. Make sure you enjoy it. The good old days are being made right now. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. As always, we encourage your participation on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. All right, Michelle, in honor of you being back with us this week.
Aw, thanks, guys.
Would you like to go sports or non-sports?
Let's go non-sports today.
All right. You can pick one for one day. All things are equal. It's summertime. A lot of people travel during the summertime. You can pick one, your go-to for one day. You going with your favorite water park or your favorite amusement park? Which one are you going with? Favorite water park or favorite amusement park? And which one are those, by the way?
I will quickly answer that one. It's amusement park a million times out of a million. Water parks with the standing water gross me out, man. Gross me out. I mean, it's been a few years. The kids have clamored for those, and I'm like, God, okay, I guess. The thing is, you can go to a great amusement park, and you can still have water rides included to cool you off, right?
Yeah.
You know, you go down like a big hill with a big splash or something, and that's fine. And easily the best amusement park in the world, it's not close, is Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio.
There you go. Zero hesitation from Rexro. Michelle Knezvik, water park or theme park?
Okay, so if you were to ask me this in, you know, elementary, I used to be deathly afraid of roller coasters. And then my fifth grade field trip was to an amusement park, and I couldn't be the one who just sat on every ride. So I just bit my tongue and I just pretended like I loved roller coasters. But then after that, I actually started liking them. So see, I'm with Joe. I feel like there's only so many water slides you can go on, but the roller coasters, they're just endless, and you have the water rides. And I've never been to Cedar Point, but isn't that one like really old, Joe? Like, do they have new rides?
Oh yeah, they got.
Always are like, yeah, they got the most. Yeah, they're adding new stuff all the time. I mean, yeah, they've been there a long time, but they got the most big time coasters that I know of in the world.
Okay, well, that'll be on the bucket list. I've never been there yet, but I think the best one I've been to is Busch Gardens in Tampa. That one's pretty sick. So definitely amusement park.
Sounds like y'all been to some pretty awful water parks. You really need to step up your game there. I'll go amusement park too, but it's much closer decision between me and you guys. Like, y'all never been to like Splash and Safari, Holiday World, and all this other stuff?
No.
Oh my gosh.
Blizzard Beach though in Disney's pretty sick.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Robbie's like, no, it's not.
Jeez.
Just like everybody, then everybody's sunblock comes off in the water, and you're smelling
it. I will say
there
are some times at a water park where I'm looking around and I'm thinking, this is not good. this could end pretty poorly. All right, we'll move on to sports. Who is the most underrated coach in sports? Who is the most underrated coach in sports? And I'll start on this one to give you guys some time to think about it. And I'm a little biased on this one, but I'm going to say it anyway. Eric Spoelstra is about to have the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Final again for the second time in 3 years. They very well could go on to the NBA Finals. They got a lot of really good players. I don't know that they have anybody that you would necessarily describe as a superstar. I mean, maybe Jimmy Butler, but Jimmy Butler's not exactly in the same category. It's like your Steph Curry's and your LeBron's and all these other guys of the world. And yet they're about to find their way back to the Eastern Conference Final. I think they're going to get to the NBA Finals. He's won 2 championships. I realize it was with LeBron and Wade and all these other people, but he's a Hall of Fame coach, and I feel like people just forget that he's there and don't even act like he's very good. Eric Spoelstra, to me, is one of the most underrated coaches I've ever seen. Eric Spoelstra is the most underrated coaches right now today in sports. Eric Spoelstra, most underrated guy.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. One name that comes to mind, and I think it's just, you know, I think just because in that league, there are just a lot of coaches who get more attention, and also maybe because he's related to someone who gets an inordinate amount of attention. I think John Harbaugh is, I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done and the longevity and for doing when Lamar Jackson came in, they got him at the end of the first round. For doing what he did, which at the time, I think now people look at, and like, for example, talking about Malik Willis with the Titans, you know, well, they're going to have to adjust the offense. I mean, that was kind of like unheard of or certainly way more frowned upon when he did what he did with that offense with Lamar Jackson. And it turns out, now granted, they haven't had the postseason success that you would like with that. And last year was a rough season all the way around, but they're also incredibly hit by injuries. But that was a pretty bold move, and I'd still say overall it's been a pretty darn good move. Guy who's gone through different eras, and I just feel like he's got a really good – like Jim Harbaugh gets, you know, obviously, you know, has had success, got to a Super Bowl, Michigan high profile job, but I feel like John's a way better coach than Jim. And yeah. I don't think he's gotten nearly the amount of attention.
I think it's a really good one. Michelle.
Okay. Honestly, for this one, I feel like my brain just went completely blank and I was just trying to like Google and I'm like, who do I think is most underrated? And I might like flip this question a little bit, maybe not okay. underrated, but, and you guys are going to, the text line's going to be heated after I say this, but maybe not as appreciated for what they do. And oh, I don't boy. Know.
Like, I know
I think, this is just my personal opinion, that what John Calipari does.
Oh, God.
With, honestly, though, listen. I don't want to count the last 2 years because I'm just going to, nobody counts them. We went through a lot of stuff, okay? Look at Robbie right now. But having for, you know, those years, the Tyler Hero years, the Tyrese Maxey, honestly, a true 4 or 5 freshmen on the team and getting as far as they do with, I think, the national title being, Robbie, Joe can't even look at me. I'm going to say him. You know, I'm not going to even go further on this because I could just go for a while. But, you know, roast me on the text line. I know I'm going to get some. So, yeah.
Joe, your thoughts.
I mean, we don't have time. We don't have time to ratio this as much as it needs to be ratioed. But I would respectfully disagree.
That was a pretty sly move by Michelle to just slide that in there when we have no time to talk about it. That's good stuff. We're going to bring this back up at some point. All right, quickly, non-sports. In honor of Scott Stapp, which musical act is a guilty pleasure of yours? Which musical act is a guilty pleasure of yours? I can start on this one, too. Big Taylor Swift guy here. Love me some Taylor Swift. Went to Hendersonville High School. I would argue that her music, probably not designed for me. Like, I'm probably not the target audience of her music more often than not. But T-Swizzle can put out some jams, man. Give me some Taylor Swift. Guilty pleasure.
Can I go next?
I would.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Mine's just really funny. It's a playlist from a Disney movie. And this is going to sound a little strange, but you listen to that Lilo and Stitch soundtrack. Hawaiian roller coaster ride. Such a jam.
Bangers.
Guilty pleasure. I listen to it on the way to work sometime. And I know that I'm probably going to embarrass myself by saying this, but I don't care. Lilo and Stitch soundtrack. Go listen to it.
I mean, half of my, you know, my catalog is guilty pleasure stuff. I mean, I'm with you. Yeah. This obscure little cheesy band called the Beatles. No, but Taylor Swift would be on there for me. I mean, I love 70s, like one hit wonders too, but like I'm rocking some Olivia Newton-John. I'm rocking some Bee Gees.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going through my iTunes right now.
Bee Gees is a good one.
You know, I mean, the disco era, some of those songs, all, you know, rocking those. Here's some Bobby Brown in here. Here's some, you know, I mean, some Captain Tennille, some Carly Simon, some Chaka Khan. I mean, dude, like I got lots. But you know what? Taylor Swift's a good one. Taylor Swift's a good one. I'm there with you.
All right. Very quickly, last sports question, and I want listeners' participation on this one as well. You can choose one. Only one of these will happen if you're a Predators fan. You can re-sign Philip Forsberg, or you can have Barry Trotz back as your coach. Which way are you going? You can re-sign Philip Forsberg, or you can have Barry Trotz back as your coach. You can only pick one.
I will say what I think Preds fans should say is re-sign Philip Forsberg. It's still about the players on the team, but I bet you more people would say Trotz.
I think you may be onto something there. My answer is Forsberg. Now, I will say this. You know, Barry Trotz became the head coach of the New York Islanders and immediately lost John Tavares. And everybody thought they were going to be screwed. And then he went to the playoffs in the second round, 2 consecutive conference finals, and then he got fired this past year. So he can make stuff. We've seen him do it before when the roster's a little less talented. Having said that, I'll go Philip Forsberg.
You want to have fun games to watch, Philip Forsberg, but – I think fans will say Trotz and go full rebuild and try to win a Stanley Cup. So I'll go Trotz.
There you go. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson. We'll get his thoughts on all things NFL and the Tom Brady situation as well with Fox Sports. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.